How to be a chip off the old block. Well, we talk about children when they're like their parents like that, don't we? If you were here last week, you may have enjoyed the picture of Jago two mornings a week running round the park, pushing six-month-old Daisy in the three-wheeled buggy and telling us how her curiosity made her just like her father. Well, actually, he said her nosiness made her just like Dad, a chip off the old block. And as Jesus speaks in this sermon, he's wanting to explain actually what we'll be like if we're a chip off the old block, or rather if we're going to reflect the likeness of our heavenly parent, our heavenly Father. He goes on distinguishing in this talk the true disciple from the rest. How do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? And his answer in this little section we're looking at is they're the ones who show that astonishingly generous love that is so characteristic of our Father. Look down at verse 35. Love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be sons of the Most High. Because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Don't take fright at the son's word, feeling that anyone's excluded. Quite the opposite, actually. It's wanting to include women as those who are heirs and inheritors, because in those days only sons could. Now, be merciful, verse 36, just as your Father in heaven, is merciful. Show the family likeness. And the family likeness is this extraordinary love to the undeserving. Came across a remarkable story about a wedding banquet in Boston, Massachusetts, in the Hyatt Hotel. A few months earlier, the woman and her fiancé had come to the Hyatt Hotel. They'd ordered the meal, you know, they'd pored over the menu, decided what china they were going to have, looked at the flower arrangements. It was a pretty elaborate do. They made the down payment, the cheque for half the amount, and they went home. And just before the invites were being sent out to the wedding, suddenly the groom got cold feet and backed out, left the bride devastated and angry. She went back to the Hyatt Hotel to cancel the banquet, and the events manager couldn't have been more understanding. The same thing happened to me, she said, and told the story of her own broken engagement. Unfortunately, when it came to the refund, she'd got nothing but bad news. All that she was entitled to was 10% of this extraordinary sum back. Seemed crazy to her, but the jilted bride suddenly had this idea in her head she couldn't let go of. She liked the idea of going ahead with a party. I mean, not a wedding banquet, but a big blowout. 10 years previously, she'd been living in a homeless shelter. She'd managed to get herself off the streets into a job. Actually, she'd come good and she'd got a sizable nest egg that she was going to use on the wedding. And she suddenly thought, well, why not use at least some of that and blow it on a great party for the down and outs in Boston? So that June, the Hyatt Hotel in downtown Boston hosted a party the like of which it had never seen before, and I suspect never since. The hostess changed the menu to boneless chicken in memory of her fiancé, and she sent invitations out to the rescue missions and the homeless shelters, and people who were used to sort of peeling half-gnawed pizza off the cardboard, they dined instead that night on chicken cordon bleu. Hyatt waiters in tuxedos served these senior citizens propped up on their crutches, the bag ladies, the vagrants, the addicts. They took one night off from the hard life on the streets and sipped champagne, ate chocolate wedding cake, and danced to big band melodies late into the night. Extraordinary wedding, isn't it? You know, the down and outs, they experienced grace for a night. The true disciple experiences grace for eternity. Even more relevantly, in our little section here, the true disciple expresses grace for a lifetime. That's how you can tell the true disciple in a crowd. And grace, well, it's described here, isn't it? Grace is more than grin and bear it love. Look how the section begins, verse 27. But I tell you who hear me. There's a contrast Jesus is explaining between what others say and what I tell you. Between what others do and what I tell you. How to spot a true disciple in the crowd? Well, look at how they handle opposition. Look at how they handle hatred and exclusion and insult and rejection, which we saw last week was part and parcel of discipleship. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. See, that's more than keep a stiff upper lip, isn't it? That is more than grin and bear it. You know, we've all got to face it. Don't let it get to you. Love your enemies, not just your friends. Do good to those who hate you, not just don't harm them. Disciples are going to come under the cosh. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who ill-treat you. Well, I'd never have used the expression ill-treat because it was nothing like that at all, but I can remember once at college, someone who rubbed up many of us the wrong way, didn't seem to be a friend of the gospel, though he claimed to be, and coming across verses like this and realizing I ought to pray for him. And you know, it changed my attitude, it changed my heart. Oh, I still thought he was wrong plenty of times. I still thought I needed to say so a number of times. But how I thought of him, how I acted to him, that changed. It's difficult to pray for someone and stay bitter. Now, I wonder as we read these words, those of you who are believing prayers, maybe you have your prayer list. I wonder if there are some names that ought to be added to your prayer list. Maybe names in the family, maybe the names of colleagues at work, maybe neighbours, the kind of people you can't stand and ought not to be taken off the prayer list but added to it. If someone strikes you on the cheek, if someone strikes you on one cheek, verse 29, turn to him the other also. I don't think this is the Mike Tyson uppercut that's primarily in Jesus' mind here. It's more the kind of, it was a phrase for a ritual slap, an insult, branding you a heretic. And he says, don't hit back, turn to him the other cheek also. It's more attitude than action, but Jesus lived it. You remember his trial? I mean, he got the lot there. Agonizing pain and blows and massively painful, you suspect, mocking, jeering, and insults. And all you got back from him was, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. He's not talking about what he's not going to live. Always forgive your enemies. Nothing infuriates them more, one wag said. You notice that's not what's being said here. That's not the point. The love that Jesus looks for is not point-scoring or revenge-seeking love. Do to others, verse 31, as you would have them do to you. Put yourselves in their shoes and think how you'd want to be treated. Merciful loving is always thinking what I can give. See, do to others as you'd have them do to you. You do see how positive it is, don't you? It's not don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. How do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? Well, see how they handle opposition, and it's more than grin and bear it, love. How do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? Well, it's more than tit for tat love you get out of them. Look at verses 32 to 34. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit's that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit's that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. I think as I look back to my pre-conversion days, I put it crudely, but I think there was something in it. You know, I had the world divided into kind of three groups of people. Those I liked and got on with, those who were useful from time to time, so you at least stayed in with them, and those who didn't fit in either of those categories, and they kind of didn't matter. And the difference between then and now is not that I showed no love then, and now I'm wonderfully loving. I wasn't without love if you fell into the right category. What I discovered, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, is that God's mercy is not selective. And nor must the Christians be. That's what marks out the true disciple. He or she's the one who shows love across the board. You see, what marks out the true disciple? It's not a loving act or a good deed or a generous gesture. Even sinners do those. Now, it's crossing the boundaries. You rub my back, I'll rub yours, love is common as anything. This is radically different. Now, have you thought what it takes to make cliques? It's not having a friendship group. I guess we've all got that. I mean, some of our friendship groups are terribly narrow, but we've all got some kind of a friendship group. You know, people we know better than others, people where the chemistry, whatever that quite might be, actually clicks between us. People where, we share the same preferences as they do. No, what makes a clique is not that we've got a friendship group, it's that we won't step out of it. Or we won't let others step into it. That's when you've got a clique. I reserve my love and my generosity for it. Tony Campello, an American professor, did a survey in secular universities, and he asked students if there's any saying of Jesus that they remembered, and what came out as easily the highest remembered saying of Jesus was love your enemies, as if it was so unnatural, perhaps even suicidal. Do you remember the film Forrest Gump? You ever see that, Forrest Gump, the dimwit with the low IQ who rescues his buddies in Vietnam, remains faithful to his girl Jenny in spite of her constant infidelity, lives as though he genuinely doesn't know that he is the butt of every joke going. Naive, thick, ridiculous, all of those things, and yet at the same time extraordinarily full of this generous, merciful love. There was once a conference. And they were in a little bit of time off. There's all these sort of high-powered people here. It was a conference on comparative religion. And they were discussing amongst themselves what belief was unique to the Christian faith. Now, they wondered about incarnation, but other religions have got gods coming to earth. They wondered about resurrection, but other religions have got life after death. And as they were discussing, C.S. Lewis, the author and actually distinguished English professor, happened to wander into the room, and he said, "What's the fuss all about?" And they said they were discussing Christianity's unique contribution among world religions. And Lewis simply replied, "Oh, that's easy, it's grace." And in the end, they had to agree. The idea of God's love coming free of charge, no strings attached. You know, the Buddhist Eightfold Path, the Hindu doctrine of karma, the Jewish covenant, the Muslim code of law, each offers a way to earn approval. Only Christianity dares to make God's love unconditional. But to reflect that, for some of us, these are very painful words, aren't they? You know, the child who's actually been abused and been hurt deeply, that the parent who feels betrayed, that the colleague who makes work an almost constant ordeal, the neighbor who just wears down with self-centered demands, love your enemy? Love your enemy? Now, how do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? Love? No, it's not love, is it? If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? How do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? Love your enemies. That's the difference. And that's more than tit-for-tat love. More than grin and bear it love. More than tit-for-tat love. More finally than common sense love. My mum was very strong on common sense. You know, that's really what made the world go round. And Hugh, why don't you use some common sense, was a sort of fairly permanent refrain, a scratched record in our house. So I'm all for common sense as well. The great danger, though, is if we begin with common sense and try and fit the Bible into that, we discover it can get in the way. You see, you look at a verse like verse 29. See, if someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, don't stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, don't demand it back. Common sense immediately asks, are you really asking me to take this literally? Now, there are some people, aren't there? You give them an inch and they take a mile. Give them a yard, who knows how much they'll take. Is this really what a parent is meant to do with their child every time? Teacher with a pupil? Do I have to give to every beggar? whenever they ask? Am I really meant to run my business this way? You may think I'm fudging, but I actually think if you asked those questions like that to Jesus, he'd say, no. If you're going to talk like that, you'll miss the point. He's not calling for gullibility, but love. Now, love disciplines the child. The child that's not disciplined doesn't know love. Love disciplines the child, but be sure it is love doing it, and not piqued pride or angry resentment. Love may well turn down the beggar's demand for money, knowing that it does too often go on drink and drugs. But be sure it's love and not love of your possessions. Be sure it's love and not stinginess. Have time or pennies needed to truly care? It's one that hits all of us, isn't it? You don't have to go far, even in London, before you've got to face up to that one. As we've moved down here and I'm trying to work it out. At the moment, I'm working on making sure I am generous to a charity that works among the homeless, so that if I say no to an individual, I'm not actually just being tight-fisted. Now, we mustn't miss the point of what Jesus is saying. And you see, when you get to a verse like verse 35, love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. That is more than common sense love, isn't it? Common sense wouldn't let you go that far. If we've got the kind of love that prides itself on, I've never been taken in by any of these beggars. You know, the teacher who's never ever been duped by one of their students. I think if we're proud of that, we're entitled to ask the question, has the child ever experienced grace from you? Have you never risked being taken in? The true disciple shows this love, the love that loves enemies, that does good to them, that lends without expecting to get anything back, that shows the extravagance of that Hyatt Hotel in Boston. A generosity that is the opposite of tight-fisted, penny-pinching. It's more than an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Tit for tat. We mustn't go to the poor and the deprived, materially, socially, emotionally, spiritually, of this city with mere common sense love. See, this is ready to lose out love. You do know that the cloak, the outer garment, was the one item that was your inalienable right in the Old Testament law. This is forfeit what I have a right to, love. That is the sign of a chip off the old block. Like father, like son. Well, the son, we're told of him, while we were still enemies, he died for us. The son, we're told, he didn't count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, made himself a nobody, took on human nature, went to death, even death on a cross. And we want to talk about common sense love? Then I need to look at Jesus again, don't I? And then I need to look at his teaching again. If I'm going to reflect that love, if mine's going to be the life of someone who is a chip off the old block, well, it's got to be this kind of grace. It's got to be the grace that is more than grin and bear it, more than tit for tat, more than common sense love. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Amen.